All right, we're back with another They Don't Teach You That in Law School series. Troy, here with us, our resident law student. Almost done, though, right? You're two years in.
I'm finishing up this fall.
I don't know what we're going to do next year. Somebody's got to fill that chair.
But. I know. Well, I'm finishing a little. I still have to wait to take the bar. Everybody always asks, like, oh, you start being a lawyer in the fall. And I'm like, no, I have to take the bar and then wait on the answer.
Pesky bar exam. We're going to talk about that in detail when you have to do it. Anyway, They Don't Teach You That in Law School series, lawyertalkpodcast.com. Check us out. The idea here is we talk about stuff. Maybe you learn the academics on the law school side. And then in the real side, when we do criminal defense practice day in, day out, you learn how it really works. Like there's like the theoretical and then boots on the ground, like the classic debate. Like Bruce Willis in the movie where they had to go drill the, what is that movie?
Yeah.
You don't even know. They had to go drill the meteor.
Oh, Armageddon.
Armageddon.
Yeah, right. So I know.
I know how to drill, right? So don't tell me. I know how to drill. So look, the idea is as we deal with stuff day in and day out in law practice, I think there's some education here for law students where, you know, maybe they don't teach you that in law school. And I think this is really the stuff that everybody else wants to know too. Today, I'm going to talk to you about discovery and specifically criminal discovery in a case and how that really works because we just had this issue come up.
Yep.
So generally speaking, and this is in federal, state, in almost every court I've ever practiced, there's something called Rule 16. Did they even teach you what Rule 16 is?
No, they don't really teach us any of like those rules. Criminal procedures, more like the constitutional issues, that kind of deal. So we don't learn any of the rules. The only class we have on discovery is electronical discovery, where they teach you how Matrix works. That's about it.
Yeah. It's unbelievable to me because I am a criminal defense lawyer. I've done it for 30 years. I got out of law school. I was working for lawyers upstairs, great ones. And while I was in law school, I got out of law school and I had the same revelation that you just had. Wait a minute. We have a whole thing in Ohio and in federal courts called the Rules of Criminal Procedure. And in law school, I didn't even know they existed, and I didn't read them.
Yeah.
Now, it's not the same with civil procedure. You actually read the rules.
Civil procedure, you memorize all the rules. Right. And that's why I thought crim was going to be like, and I'm kind of happy it wasn't like that. It was a lot more entertaining learning all the constitutional issues in criminal law.
Yeah.
But it's very important to probably learn all the criminal rules.
Right. So criminal procedure in law school is not really criminal procedure. It's constitutional stuff. My buddy once said, it's all the stuff that bastards can't do to you.
Yeah. Right? It's pretty much three con law classes. You have your two con laws. And then
constitutional
law
is what you
mean. Yeah, constitutional law. But they never focus on the criminal stuff, really. They kind of do very little. But it's bigger issues. And then crim pro is just... we're just only going to hone in on the Constitution.
All right. So here's how the day in and day out of discovery. We file something called a demand for discovery. They never taught you that in law school.
No, but based on just upstairs, it's pretty much like one of the first things getting filed, like immediately.
Yeah. So my client pleads not guilty. First thing we file is a demand for discovery. And the prosecutor has to give us, when I tell clients what they're giving us, I'm going to say now they have to give us all the evidence that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that encompass? Well, if our client made a statement, we get that. If there are witness statements, we get those, whether they're written or they're recorded. If there's expert tests, the case we're going to talk about in a minute, there's really two experts, one for cell phone forensics, another for accident reconstruction.
Yep.
We get the results of those tests and examinations and all the underlying data that is relied upon to support those results. We get our clients and every other witness's criminal record and criminal history. We get, what am I missing here?
I think you might've touched on it, but the biggest one is just body cams.
Oh, body. I was going to talk about body cam footage. Yeah. So audio visual evidence, body cam footage. And look, this was 15 years ago. We used to get, say we had a DUI or an OVI case and you're pulled over. We would get a VHS tape with about 20, 30 minutes, maybe an hour of dash cam footage. And we would have to watch it, and we loved it. We loved it because we could see what was going on. So before that, we didn't get anything. It was just the cop's written version.
Mm-hmm.
Then we started getting dash cam footage, and we loved it because we could verify what the cop was saying. Didn't always match. Imagine that. But anyway, then we have body cam footage, and it's one of those be careful what you ask for, because what do you spend a lot of days doing?
Just watching and transcribing them. That's terrible.
How many hours? Like, so think about it. You get, say there's a, like our current case, how many cops were at the scene?
I'd go with around 10.
All right. And the scene was how many hours long?
They were at the scene for at least probably 4 hours.
Okay.
It's some of them longer, because some, they don't stay there that long. Some they do, but it's a pickle, because.
And we have police cruisers that have dash cam. And a lot of times those are two angles. Mm-hmm. Then you have police officers and patrolmen wandering around with body cams.
Yep.
And there's times five hours each.
Yeah.
Do the math. I mean, you can spend a week of legal time reviewing that stuff. Now, look, you know, be careful what you wish for. We used to say, I'd love to have body cam footage. Now we have it and we have to watch it. And you not only have to watch it, you have to watch it even if you don't think that it matters.
Mm-hmm.
Because what if it does? You know, this is like that problem. And everybody's like, well, what's the big deal? Well, it costs time and money. I mean, as old honest Abe Lincoln said, you know, this quote probably, the lawyer's time is his stock in trade. We don't sell goods. I don't sell inventory. I don't have a store. I sell my time. And if I'm going to spend 40 or 50 hours of my time watching body cam footage on, say, a DUI case, like, where's that math? I mean, it doesn't, there's no way you could recoup that time, yet you have to watch it. I mean, our solution, of course, is
law clerks.
Right. and not that I don't watch any of it. I watch a lot of it, but, you know, I have people screen it for me and help me understand it. I've sped it up at times.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I put it on the background and put headphones on, so because it's mostly audio. I mean, look, but I have also found that if I watch it all, or we get through all of it in our cases, but I've found stuff in cases that I never would have thought existed,
mm-hmm.
ever. So you have to watch it. Anyway, that's part of discovery.
I would just go with like 95% of the body cam footage is like worthless, but it does, like, you have to go through it, because it'd be nice if they just turned their body cam on when they found something or like something was going on, but they don't do that.
Well, you don't want them to do that.
Well, right? Yes. Yeah, I understand that, but like, it'd be nice if they're like, all right, we're about to have a discussion. I'm like, we're going to turn this on, but it's actually usually the opposite. Hold on, we're about to have a discussion. They all turn it off.
Well, that's a good point. So explain what you're talking about.
So they, like,
two cops or three, a group of cops.
Yep. They're at a scene. They're looking at something, and then like, you can see them all look at each other like they're about to have a talk, and then they'll signal, and then they'll all turn the audio off. And then I'm sitting there, I'm like, one, why would you even do that?
Right.
Like, what are you guys talking about that you don't want us to hear?
It's the appearance of impropriety. And sometimes, like, this has happened in a case I worked on a couple years ago. Same kind of thing, a group of cops out making an arrest, and it was out in the middle of the country, and they were walking up on somebody who was in the woods. Anyway, you see them going sort of like,
mm-hmm.
you know, like pointing at their chest, like they all turn about, but one of them didn't. One of them didn't get the cue, and we got to hear it, and it made the case. It's like, it made the case.
It just doesn't make sense to me, like, why they would. I mean,
because look, I support police officers, and people ask how that happens, like all the time. I butt heads with police officers. You've seen me cross examining, and sometimes it does get sort of cross. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, I try to do it in a friendly, at least a, I don't know. Nice way.
Yeah. As nice as you can do it.
Well, like, you don't have to be mean to people. You just have to ask questions and get answers. But I recognize that they're also human.
Mm-hmm.
And we are all human, folks. The idea of the system is we get to challenge the other side's case, not necessarily because we think they're going to intentionally construct a case or frame somebody, but we all come into things with certain biases.
Mm-hmm.
And this will get us to the point we're talking about. We're working on a case. It's going to trial next week. We're not going to talk about what it is.
Yep.
But it's, you know, we have maybe one business day before trial. And I get an email from a prosecutor. And it says, oh, by the way, we were doing some trial preparation and we found some more information and for discovery. We're not going to use it necessarily, but we thought we should get it to you.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to get through that last night?
It took me a couple hours. But like, this is also the eve of like a holiday weekend. It's not something like normally people would do, but it was a lot of stuff that I don't really understand. And that was a big thing we talked about yesterday. It's a lot of cell phone, Cellebrite data, which that stuff's massive. It's confusing. And then it was like, it was crash reconstruction data. Stuff that I don't even know. You know, I'm looking up all this stuff, like trying to figure out what all these acronyms mean.
It's the kind of stuff you need an expert to look at.
Yes.
Right. So absolutely. Here's the deal. We made decisions in this case based on what we initially received in discovery. Mm-hmm. And one of the decisions is we consult with experts. We don't necessarily need them to testify. And this could change that. So when a prosecutor tells me, don't worry, it's no big deal, we're not going to use it, my response is, what if I need to use it?
Yeah.
And usually you get a crickets response from that. You know, then it was crickets when I said that. It's like, look, what if I need to use it? And it's like, listen, dude, this isn't a one-way street. We get to defend this case. And look, you convict my client if that's what you want to try to do, but do it fairly. So the discovery rules, the stuff they don't teach you in law school about discovery, is there has to be timely discovery. And it's not just they have to give you stuff, but they can't ambush you on the eve of trial with additional information. Now, you don't know, they also don't teach you in law school what happens when this occurs. I mean, any thoughts of where this goes next?
I mean, in my head, we would motion to continue because this is expert material. I mean, even when I was running stuff through, you know, software. I'm not an expert. I'm trying to run it through softwares. I'm just finding online everything. And we're getting different results than what their expert's saying. I'm not an expert, but now I'm seeing conflicts. Like, I just want to know the answer here, and we can't figure it out. And this is enough where, yes, we want to consult an expert. So imagine we motion continue, and our argument is, I understand that like, you want us to go to trial, but we need to figure out what this evidence is that we just got and whether or not it can help our client and whether or not we need to use it at trial. And we can't do that until we talk to somebody who can interpret the evidence for us, which is an expert. And then can we use that expert then to help interpret it to a jury correctly?
Right. And so here's the questioning we're going to get. And so generally speaking, when there's a discovery violation, meaning we have caught, not caught, but the prosecutor delivers discovery like this late. And I'm not suggesting this was done intentionally. Sometimes it is, but I'm not suggesting that here necessarily. I don't know yet. But we get discovery late. You go to a judge and the judge is like, well, what is it? And, you know, it's a bunch of data and calculus. How's it going to help your case? And I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the problem. This isn't stuff that I can just look at and say, yeah, no big deal. It may be no big deal, but let's sort of shift the narrative or shift the camera view to the person sitting next to us. So say that individual, the client, now knows that this evidence is out there and he gets convicted because whatever, he goes to trial and gets convicted. And then he looks over and says, what was that other stuff they gave us before trial all about? I don't know.
Yeah.
Should we have had somebody look at it? I don't know. Yeah, it's like, I can't just now say, no big deal, judge. We know what the case is about otherwise. So it's sort of like, when we prepare a case for trial, it starts like huge. Mm-hmm. And you have to look at everything. It's not unlike a term paper. Anybody who's written a term paper without AI knows how this works. You go research everything. So in law school, you go look at all the cases.
Yeah.
So we have an issue and you're going to be looking at them in discovery violations very soon. Mm-hmm. But you look at all the cases and the cases talk about crap that is completely irrelevant to what we're dealing with. But you know that. So you know that this case is this and this scenario and this scenario and this scenario. And then you can narrow it down to our scenario. And then you can focus on what's important in a case. But you can't do that unless you've looked at all of it first.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what's out there. So what's going to happen? How's this unfold in the context of our case? There are generally three remedies for discovery violations. And they don't teach you this in law school. But
no,
they do teach you this in the real world. The first is, and the rules, there are three remedies. And the court should choose the least drastic remedy from bottom to top. Continuance to allow the other side a chance to review this and figure out what's going on.
Yep.
Exclusion of the evidence, meaning the side that didn't provide it can't use it. And then third, a dismissal if it's really egregious or done intentionally. What's going to happen here? The problem is number two, the middle one, doesn't work for us.
No.
Because it's not just, and the prosecutor's sort of already, he's not offering not to use all of it, but he's offering not to use some of it. And I'm like, well, yeah, but what if I, So here's the thing. When a prosecutor says, look, here's this all the evidence, but it's no big deal. We're not going to use it in our case. What, I mean, what's the natural reaction or conclusion?
That they still can use it, and then we're going to object at trial.
No. Go. Keep going.
Like, what if they do use it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So well, one like, side doesn't want to use it. What does that tell you about the evidence?
It's like it hurts them.
Maybe it's helpful to the other side.
Yes, just maybe.
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Yeah, no, okay. That makes sense.
So, and that was my question in response. Like, look, he says, I'm not going to use it. Yeah, but what if I want to?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the problem with number two. Excluding it doesn't work because I don't even know what I'm dealing with yet.
Yeah.
A continuance really is the only remedy. Now, if the judge says, look, guys, I'm sick of this crap. This case is over a year old. I'm not continuing it. You're going to trial. Well, then I say, look, judge, here's my record. I don't have all the discovery. I can't look at my client and say, I've done everything I should do for you. I can't look at my client and say, all your constitutional rights are protected because we've consulted with experts. We have evaluated all the evidence. We have considered the pros and cons of using it or not using it. We know what the government's case is all about. I can't say that now, judge, but I'll go to trial if that's what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're talking about an appeal if we lose. And that's just all we can do, you know, if the judge says no. Or the judge could say, no, case is old. I'm not continuing it. I understand, guys, you can't represent your client. So we're going to look over to this other table and say, sorry, Mr. Prosecutor, I'm dismissing this. Happens. Yeah. Doesn't happen a lot, but sometimes that does happen. I suspect we're going to end up with a continuance in this because it's the right outcome.
Yeah.
It's the right outcome. Now there's one other area of discovery we should talk about that isn't in the criminal, well, it's in the criminal rules, but it's also constitutionally backed. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Brady versus Maryland.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So look, yeah. Again, I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, I know.
So prosecutors not only have to give us things like the results of examinations, witness statements, audiovisual evidence, prior records, expert reports, what all the normal stuff. They are also required, not only in the rules of Criminal Rule 16, but constitutionally required to give to the defense favorable evidence. The word is exculpatory, which is fancy talk for things that might help the defense,
mm-hmm.
either with respect to guilt or punishment. Now that matters because it's not just help you be found not guilty, but if it's mitigating for punishment purposes, you should get that too. The problem is this is like the fox guarding the hen house because we don't know what exculpatory evidence is out there.
Yeah.
The prosecutor does. And the Brady case basically puts the decision-making on whether this is exculpatory into the fox's hands. And again, I'm not suggesting all prosecutors are evil. But they don't do what we do. Like they don't know what's going to be helpful to my case because they don't necessarily know my strategy. And it creates this sort of cat and mouse game that's been played now for years and years and years and years. That's why we have to do our own independent investigation. Never trust that you're going to get everything. Get an investigator. Work up the case. And if your lawyer's not doing that, talk to him. Yeah.
It is difficult because we don't know what they have. It would be interesting to see like,
so this
no prosecutor's gonna just come out and say, "Yeah, I just hide evidence." Like nobody's gonna say that, but it would be interesting.
I have found exculpatory evidence. I used to say this every time I try a case, I find something. Every time, I'll tell you a war story. I try to avoid war stories. I'll tell you a war story. I tried an arson case, and the case was basically this: it was a boyfriend, girlfriend, and they were fighting about something. Girlfriend gets pissed off, says, "Oh yeah, watch what I'm gonna do." Picks up his shoes, says, I'm going to burn your favorite shoes. I'm going to destroy your favorite shoes. You know,
never really understood sneaker guys. So,
but look, guys collect this stuff. So,
I mean, if she burnt my Crocs, I guess I understand. I'd be pretty frustrated.
So she burned the shoes. And so she lights the shoes on fire, throws them down, leaves. Well, guess what happened? They're in a multifamily residence with a condo comp, like three or four doors. And curtains catch on fire, place goes up. Nobody's hurt, mercifully. Nobody's hurt. But my client's indicted on the worst form of arson, which is basically purposely setting something on fire with the intent to cause physical harm or serious physical harm. Like it was over-indicted. There was, there was too much. It wasn't just property damage arson. It was like real arson.
Yeah.
Like, I want to kill somebody arson or cause harm. We go to trial and we get an acquittal, meaning I won the case because of that. There was a bridge too far. So basically there was the serious arson and then the property damage arson. We got not guilty verdicts on the serious arson. We got a guilty verdict on the not so serious arson, which I think might even been a misdemeanor. We hung it. We hung it on the property one.
Oh, okay.
So the jury didn't reach a verdict. So the prosecutor comes up to me afterwards and says, "Hey, look, if your client wants to plead guilty to the felony, we can do it." I looked at him and I said, "Dude, we won. I'm not pleading guilty to anything." Anyway, and he's a buddy of mine now. But then he made a statement, like later on, he made a statement to me. He's like, "Yeah, when our arson expert was testifying, I was worried that you were going to ask him these questions. You didn't ask him." I said, "Well, do tell, my friend." Mm. And he says, "Well, it turns out that when you, the rubber on those shoes, when it lights on fire, it turns into something akin to like Greek fire." If anybody knows what Greek fire is, the Greeks used to have this substance they would light on fire. It was sort of like napalm, I guess, where it would hit and spread. You know, it, and the rubber would melt and ooze across the room and end up lighting the curtains on fire. Because I think it mattered. Like they were saying, it wasn't just the shoes. She actually started torching places around the room. This would have explained why there was something called a full room involvement if you do firework. Anyway, it turned into this full room involvement and flashed out. And this would have helped explain that. And I looked at him. I said, "Dude, you're supposed to tell me that stuff." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "This isn't a game.
Yeah,
like, this is that's exculpatory information. You had exculpatory information that your expert would have explained how this happened without this intent to torch the entire residence." And he just looked at me sort of dumbfounded. I was like, "Man, I'm serious. You had to give me that." And we ended up, the case worked out. It was dismissed, I think, after that, whatever. But that just shows you. And he's not a dishonorable guy, but he just didn't see how that, why he should have to give me that. Because here's what happens. It's an adversarial system. It's like you, when you play basketball, like you're not going to let the, you're not going to say, "Look, man, I'm really weak with my left hand. So when I make this move over to the left, all you got to do is just give me a little drop step and I, you know, whatever." You're not going to say that.
Yeah.
You're going to try to win the damn game and hide all the stuff, hide your weaknesses. And it's a natural thing to do. The rules are designed to smoke that out. But there's that bottleneck at the end where the fox has to guard the hen house. Not all prosecutors are bad. I don't mean to say that, but they're all human.
Mm.
And this is the stuff. When's the last time you had this conversation in law school?
I don't think ever.
Ever. I would love to go teach this stuff. Anyway, look, we're gonna wrap it up there. They don't teach you that in law school. Discovery war stories coming at you from lawyertalkpodcast.com. If you've got a question you want us to cover at the law school table, we'll do it. Or at the rest of it, check out the what's the appeal, the Q&A, the DUI, whatever. Just give me a shout. I'll be happy to answer your question or cover your topic. Lots of guests coming up in the future. Check us out. Lawyer Talk, off the record, on the air, law school style. By the way, we're sponsored by Circle 270 Media. Phenomenal. If you've got a podcast that you want, if you're in the Central Ohio area, even nationally, great podcast consultant, check out Circle 270 Media. Brett over there will take care of you.